Okay, we're up to chapter 6. In Hilchos Tshuva. Now, we're talking about free will. The Rambam says that there are many key verses in the Torah and in the prophets that seem to contradict this principle. And most people are tripped up by these verses. And it seems to them that God decrees for a person that he shall do evil or good. That a person's heart is not under his control to push it to either side that he wishes. The Rambam says, I'm going to explain to you a great principle, and from this principle you know the correct understanding of all those verses. So he started with the principle, which has its own foundation, its own interest, and then eventually he'll get to those verses and explain how to understand it. When a person or a group of people, a country, transgress, and they do so with their own knowledge and their own will, as we've explained, then it is appropriate for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to punish them. And he knows how the punishment shall be applied. There are transgressions for which it is appropriate that they should be punished in this world with illness or famine, or loss of money or other things. And there are those transgressions which is appropriate to be punished in the world to come, what we call Gehenna. And there are those transgressions that's appropriate to punish in both places. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows for each one, for each transgression, where the appropriate punishment would be. Now, all this applies only if a person did not do tshuva. If he did tshuva, he will not be punished. Tshuva is like a shield which protects the person from punishment, and this principle is absolute. In even surprising ways, as you'll see, this principle that if a person does tshuva, he cannot be punished. Just like a person performs the transgressions with his own knowledge, his own understanding, and his own will, does tshuva the same way. Now, it can happen that a person will do such a great transgression, or so many transgressions, that he should be punished for that transgression that he did with his own knowledge and his own will. The punishment should be to prevent him from doing tshuva. Take away his power to do tshuva, so that he shall die and be lost because of the transgressions that he permits, that he performed. In other words, a person does a terrible transgression or a number of transgressions, and the appropriate end of this person is that he should be lost, annihilated. He should not have any share of the world to come. But there's a problem. Because if he will do tshuva, no matter what the transgression is, no matter how many they are, if he does tshuva, he cannot be punished. So, so to speak. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu wants to punish him in this way. He wants it to be lost in the world to come. He has to prevent it from doing tshuva. Because if it leads to tshuva, he cannot be punished. Now, if you think about this, you see that there's a playoff here between two principles. This guy has done terrible crimes. God wants the outcome to be that he should be punished by being ultimately annihilated. Problem is, maybe it was a tshuva. The solution is, prevent him from doing tshuva. In logic, there would have been a different solution. At least, an alternative solution. What would be the alternative solution in logic?
Prevent him from doing the fault, the mistake.
Stop. We're after that. Rabban with his father then. He did it already. Now, because of that, I did not say
Gavah. So you say instead of preventing him from doing tshuva,
yeah.
What could what
other option? Yes.
Give him the punishment.
Oh. Give him the punishment even
if he does tshuva.
Even if he does do tshuva. Even if he does do tshuva. That's the other option. Give him the punishment even if he does. Rambam says that's impossible. That's impossible. A person who does tshuva cannot be punished. He can't be punished. So therefore, says the Rambam, the only way out, this is what occurs well with last story that he does, the only way out is to stop him from doing tshuva. Stop him from doing tshuva, then you can punish him because he can't stop it.
We say, Akol Bidei Shamayim, Hot Mira Shamayim.
This is an exception, correct? Correct, this is an exception. Now, I don't understand fully, really, I didn't see anybody discuss it, why is the other option ruled out? What you have here is a picture that tshuva is the top. It's the most powerful force. Nothing can stand in the way of tshuva. Once a Kodesh Baruch Hu set it up like that, if he wants a person to be punished, he's got to stop him from doing tshuva. Because if he'll do tshuva, it's all over. Cannot break that. That can't be broken. I don't know why tshuva should be the very top, and to say the only way to make sure he gets punished is to stop from doing tshuva. Why not use the other option? Why must tshuva be so powerful that there's no exception to it? Some of you who've been here for a while know that I have told you that almost always in Chazal, when you see a rule, it's a rule that works most of the time. The rule works when things go naturally and normally in ways expected, but usually there are conditions under which there could be exceptions. The Rambam is telling you here there can't be any exceptions to this rule. That tshuva always works. Why exactly that is, given that there's another alternative, I don't know. But that's what he says. Tshuva always works, and therefore, for such a person, the only option to make sure he gets punished is to stop him from doing tshuva. Now he quotes a number of verses. This is what the Kodesh Baruch Hu said to Isaiah. Hashmei lam lev ha'am hazeh. Let the heart of this people be fat. Kodesh Baruch Hu says, ein marpei. There's no help. There's no cure. Now, when it says, make the heart of this nation fat, put them in a position where they're going to remain evil, it means I'm not going to allow them to do tshuva for the crimes they committed before. This is the crucial element in the Rambam's interpretation of these verses. When you see a verse that says the Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to guarantee that these people will do something bad, what it means is that before this they already did crimes. And those crimes were so terrible that the appropriate response is that they should be punished. And now, after they committed those crimes, to make sure that they can be punished, we're not going to let them do tshuva. This is what it means when it says that God hardened Pharaoh's heart. God hardened Pharaoh's heart. Now the naive person reads that and says, well, if God hardened his heart, he took away his free will. And he took away his free will, why then did he punish him in the end? It's not fair. He's a robot. Didn't the Rambam himself tell us that you're only responsible if you use your own free will? And God made him into a robot. Says the Rambam, they're taking the statement out of context. If you look at the Torah at the 10 plagues, you'll see that God hardened Pharaoh's heart only in plague 6, 8, and 9. The first five, Pharaoh hardened his own heart. God didn't have to do it. So the Rambam says, how did it start? Pharaoh had, living in his country, a whole Jewish community. And he says, let's deal with them. Let's deal with them. Let's put them down. Let's make them an underclass. And then let's take advantage of them. And let's make them into slaves. This was vicious. This was vicious. And I mean, the first five plagues that were designed to get him to change his mind, he hardened his own heart. At this point, God says, he's had a record of such vicious crime that he already deserves to be punished. And therefore, I'm going to stop him from doing tshuva to make sure he gets that punishment that he deserves from the crimes that he committed with his own free will, of his own free choice. So yes, hardening Pharaoh's heart means that God took away his free will, that's true. But he only took it away at a point when, according to the crimes he's already committed, he deserves to be punished. And doesn't deserve another chance. Now, let me add a little background. I want to tell you, this problem bothered me for years and years. How could it be that God would take away free will? Isn't free will the purpose of all creation? Doesn't that mean that he's contradicting what he set up the world to do? And I worked out a very elaborate answer to this question. About 7 years ago, it occurred to me that the question is dumb. It just took me 2 or 3 decades to figure this out. Have you heard the famous story about the mathematics class? The professor putting his proof on the board. And the student says, Professor, I don't see how that follows. The professor looks for a minute, then he goes out, comes back 20 minutes later, and he says, it's obvious, and goes on. He's been thinking about it for 20 minutes, right? He goes back to the top. Anyway, it took me a long time to figure it out that the question is dumb. Let's think. Let's do a little background on the Rambam now. How committed is God to human free will? How committed is he? What are the limitations on his commitment? For each person's free will, there's one fact, one gigantic fact, which shows that God's commitment to free will for every individual is strictly limited. What fact is that? Limited. God's commitment to free will is limited strictly by one fact: death. No one's going to have it forever. It's finite. Comes to an end. Furthermore, while you're alive, you spend approximately a third of your life sleeping. You don't use your free will while you're sleeping. So there are sicknesses, you have an operation, you have anesthesia, you have people go into comas, right? The commitment to free will is strictly limited. You get a certain amount. Now, here's a way to understand what happens with Pharaoh. Pharaoh commits crimes, and develops in himself a level of wickedness. God says, you're so wicked, for my money, you could drop dead. You don't deserve to live anymore. No one's going to live forever. Everyone comes to an end. Your record is so bad, you deserve to die. Of course, if he dies, you won't have any free will, right? If he dies, his free will is over. So God says, from the point of view of your record, you could drop dead now. But I have a use for you. I'll be used to having you hang around for a while. But I'm not giving you any more free will. You don't deserve any more free will. Once you look at it that way,
The idea that God will harden someone's heart, take away his free will, is not difficult at all. He is, as they say in some places, the walking dead. Right? Spiritually, he's dead. He's just walking dead. Right? So this is what he says. Whenever you have these verses that look like God says, I'm causing them to do transgressions, what it means is, they did the transgressions before him. And they did it with their own free will. And they're guilty for it. And logically, they need to be punished for it. And God is preventing them from doing tshuva because the tshuva would stop the punishment from coming. That's how you should understand the verses that say God made it sound like they made God, God made them do things. By the way, he quotes verses that apply to the Jewish people as well, not just the non-Jews. Yeah.
Are you saying that there is a point where you did so much bad that after that point, that's it, taking away your opportunity to do tshuva? In other words, say, steal $1,000. Okay, you still do tshuva. $2,000, you steal, that's it. Once you steal $1,000,000, I'm not going to let you do tshuva anymore.
The idea is right. I don't think the application is right.
Yeah.
But the idea is right, and it applies. He gives about 8 examples, so it's not something that happened only once. It's something that can happen. A person has to know that if he builds up a bad enough record, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu can do that. That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah.
He says that question is over in 3 things here. He loses his own habit. Does that mean that he loses the ability to do tshuva?
No. It means he loses his share in the world to come if he doesn't do tshuva.
Just give an example of what level it is where he's done.
No, I don't know of any such examples. We only have examples of where it happened. Right? And they're actual historical events, so it's very difficult to know how to measure them. Rambam says you just have to know that this is something which can happen. Yeah.
When you're saying that with Pharaoh, for example, he lost his choice of free will, he's spiritually dead from that point on, or in that end?
Okay, that's a good question. In fact, I was going to say it. I think you anticipated it very rightly. I don't know whether he lost all of his free will. He lost the free will to do tshuva for this transgression. That's enough. Then for this transgression, or this string of transgression, he's going to be punished. Other things, maybe he can do.
So he lost the free will to do tshuva on his, what would have been a negative action.
That's right. Taking advantage of the Jews.
But his action, when God hardened his heart, you're saying that's also not free will.
Correct. Well, no, that's also, that's what we're talking about. There's no two things.
So that's not free will. Since that's not free will, then you can't have the free will to do tshuva on that. So what about, Pharaoh didn't see himself, if he's spiritually dead, then, he still felt the lack of free will, right?
He was given an illusion.
So how do we know when that's the case? What if that's the case with some of us sometimes?
We don't know. Correct.
Then it could be more than 8 examples. It could be going on 10 times a day every day.
It's conceivable, right? But since the only information you have to go on is these 8 examples, then the only thing you can do is think of cases that are relatively similar to these 8 examples.
In a logical sense, it does seem, in a sense, kind of weak, rather than saying, this bad thing I did, I felt that I had free will, but it could have just been that God hardened my heart. Why can't I just say that as a way out?
On the contrary, logic requires the person who wants to prove something to give good reason for believing it. I say, when a person puts 10 years of effort into bodybuilding, then he can lift 250 pounds. Well, you have people who lift 250 pounds? Maybe I can do it. I just put 10 years of bodybuilding in, but maybe that's not relevant. Maybe it applies to everybody. I say, no, if you know that all these people put in 10 years of bodybuilding, then the only conclusion you're allowed to draw is with 10 years of bodybuilding you can do it. It doesn't apply to everybody all the time.
But for some people, who can lift 250 pounds in 0 years of bodybuilding.
That's not true, as a matter of fact. So you don't know that. You have never seen anybody do that. To think that you could do it is a mistake. Because everybody who's ever done it has put in the 10 years of bodybuilding.
Assuming that, you give me that assumption.
Right.
So translate that for me back into the.
I have 8 examples of gigantic crime. Gigantic repeated crime over years and years and years. Right? Those are the cases where I can reasonably assume that God will take away free will. Doesn't follow that for every one of us, living an average life, with some mistakes and some we don't have free will.
So it's so conceivable to say that there were 8, there were 15.
Of course.
So then it's conceivable to say that there were 15 million.
No, it depends upon how many people fit the conditions of the 8.
Oh, so are we going to hear, what are the conditions?
Well, you look at them historically, you see, like take Barrow. It was a matter of decades of consistent abuse. Decades of consistent abuse. Oh, yeah, the person's guilty of decades of consistent abuse. Maybe he will lose his free will.
Oh, so you're saying it depends on the person.
It sure depends on the person, but I'm pointing out the cases that we have are extreme cases of repeated consistent evil. I cannot say, well, maybe nobody has any free will anytime. That just doesn't follow. I'll tell you, not quite. What we're saying is there may be a type of crime performed repeatedly for which God wants to punish the person. I'm not saying what the punishment is. He wants to punish the person for that crime. Right? Now the cases that he brings are cases of being lost. Well, okay, the Rambam is not correct to every measure, right? You can't ask on the Rambam from a measure. Maybe so, but the Rambam is not correct for that measure. You know, he's not correct for every measure.
He couldn't say that.
No, according to this, the purpose...
The true that he did wasn't the full true based on what you're saying. It could be a half true on it afterwards.
But it won't help. In other words, it's... The Rambam wants to make sure he's going to be punished.
Is he punished?
So therefore, he won't allow him to do tshuva that will stop the punishment. Well, okay, he says the Aved. He says the Aved. The Aved with an Aleph means he'll be destroyed. That's he'll be annihilated, right? He wants it to be annihilated. He wants it not to have a share in the world to go. Now, it doesn't have to be only that punishment. It could be other punishments as well. But when he says, I don't want you to do tshuva on this, it means I want you to be punished on this. And then you won't be able to do tshuva and be punished on this. The punishment doesn't have to be annihilation. Nothing in the logic here would require it.
So these examples, they're examples where he took away their free will to do tshuva, specifically.
That's right.
Because, you know, aren't there other examples where he took away their free will, but then later on they could do tshuva for what they did?
I'm not sure, because some of the cases here, I'm not sure whether they remain permanent. But what Rama is concerned about here is this. When you read the verses, it sounds like God caused them to do transgressions. And then, as he says, many people stumble on this. They say, well, look, if God caused them to do transgressions, then maybe that means that we don't have free will. If God caused them to do transgressions, that's within the book. It's within the plan. So maybe all transgressions are like that. Here's where the fool gets tripped up because he doesn't know the conditions built in. So the Rambam says, you're not looking at the conditions built in. This is not just a performance of evil. It's a performance of evil after a consistent record of evil. And what the third verse is telling you is that God is not allowing them to do tshuva for that consistent record. It's not a random case of evil. For a random case of evil, then you could say, well, if these random cases are caused, maybe other cases are caused. But it isn't a random case of evil. It's a case of overgeneralization, which is a source of many logical errors. Now, I want you to know, the Rambam says clearly here that when God hardened Pharaoh's heart, he took away his free will. That's not the only way to read it. The Ramban reads that statement differently. I was really shocked when I saw this, because the Ramban analyzes it with logic and says you could understand it a different way, in a way that never occurred to me. I'll give you an example, maybe two examples, so you'll understand the idea. When American soldiers went to Europe in the Second World War, when they were under fire for the first time, 10% froze. They just froze. They couldn't walk, they couldn't stand, they couldn't sit, they couldn't shoot. They just froze. They went into shock. They weren't able to handle live fire in a combat situation. This was considered a disaster. And they tried to analyze what went wrong. In Vietnam already, the army had psychological officers. Every group had a psychological officer who was there to work on the psychology of the soldiers. Now let's imagine, you have a soldier, the bullets start flying, and he freezes. Then the psychological officer comes over and says, listen, you can handle it, you can take care of it, let's move one finger, move another finger, you know, come on, you can fight them, and we could possibly win. And he encourages him, to the point where he can fight. What is the psychological officer doing? He's strengthening the soldier's heart. He's making his heart stronger to restore his free will. To restore his free will. Not to take away his free will, but to give it back to him. You have a prize fighter in the round 8, and he's bloody and he's punch drunk, and he comes back to the seat. He says to his manager, I'm getting up. I can't go out there yet. I can't beat up again. I've had it. You know, I have no strength. I have no energy. I just can't go out and fight. He's been beaten. And his trainer says, do it again. Come on. You'll make another $1,000. You know, right? Something ever says to him. And he restores his ability to fight. So according to the Ramban, you could explain this as follows. You have six plagues. The cumulative effect of six plagues means that Pharaoh's free will would be lost. He'd be overwhelmed by the six plagues. At the end of the sixth plague, he would let the Jewish people go like a robot because he's broken by the sixth plague. And God hardens his heart so that he can make a free decision to restore his freedom. Now, it was fascinating to me that the words in the Torah that God hardened Pharaoh's heart could be read two ways. Either like the Rambam, he hardened his heart, took away his free will, or like the Ramban, he was in such shock, he was lost, and God hardened his heart to restore his free will. But at any rate, that's just a footnote. The Rambam reads it that God took away his free will. But he took away his free will because he earned it by performing such a long, consistent record of free will transgressions. Okay, that's one, yeah?
Yeah, I just want to go back to one point. You said it's like the example of someone who's lifting 250 pounds. So we know that the time someone needs to work out to lift 250, but some people think that the average is 10 years.
Okay, that's not relevant. As he said, I'm making an example of logic, and you're talking about body training. Take anything which we know requires a certain background. Okay? And all the people that you've seen who do it require this background. You wouldn't then generalize and say, if these people can do it, anybody can do it. What you would say is, I know that all these cases, this background is necessary, so if I look at other people, I'll look at people who have the relevant background. Right? You wouldn't generalize to people who don't have the relevant background.
What I'm saying is, all right, so maybe it's not with everybody, but maybe it could be so often. I still can't understand why the Rambam is saying 8 examples and not like, it could varies to such an extent. Like, you need a background. Yes, you need a couple of reasons. You need to be an evil person. But what constitutes an evil person who oppresses people? Is it 10 years or 20 years or what? So, like, what?
You're imposing requirements here that you wouldn't impose anywhere else in life. Person dies of kidney disease, right? And the cause of death is kidney disease. Exactly how bad must the kidney be to die from that? No one can tell you. No doctor can tell you. It varies from person to person. There's a range where you expect it. Sometimes it's outside the range, but there's a range where you don't expect it and a range where you wouldn't predict it. No one can tell you exactly how much it is. All I'm saying, and the Rambam doesn't say there are only 8. He gives 8 examples. The logical person says, you get 8 examples. If I find other examples that are relevantly similar, then they could fall into the class. But they have to be relevantly similar. He wouldn't say a case that isn't relevantly similar would fall into the class.
So then logically, any evil person or whatever could lose their freedom.
No! Only an evil person who falls into their class. Okay. A person who worked out for 10 years. So he worked out for a month. Didn't he work out? He worked out for a month. So couldn't he lift it? No, it's got to be relevantly similar. That logic would say it in all of life. It's not going to say it to them. Huh? Yeah.
I would ask about Adam and Shalom.
Yeah.
He's probably one of the 8.
No, Chas v'Shalom.
No. I mean, Adam and Shalom didn't know to distinguish between good and bad.
No, okay. The Nosei Aruch Mo'od, Ani Matzi Lacha Tikach Atamor and Ruchu Shal Rambam, Tikach Perek Sheni, Tishma Sham, Barim Nitzvaim. It's a hanachah that you start לא נכון. זה אני לא יכול להסביר כאן. But he knew what should be done and what should not be done, and therefore he had free will, and he made a decision, and he was punished for it. He was punished for it. Look at what the Rambam says over there.
I have a similar question on the eight examples. So only these eight examples are only people who lost their free will to do shuva, like bad people. So like Judah and Tamar, that's not like one of the examples. Because that's the case where he lost his free will, didn't he?
Good for you. That is true. And that's a different one. The Rambam isn't talking about that.
What happened?
Because there, again, what is the Rambam's focus here? There are verses in the Torah, in the Tanakh, which could lead to a stray. The verses say, I make sure they will do these bad things. And you look at that and say, God makes sure to do those bad things. Then that means God causes people to do evil. Because of those verses, a person can be led astray. The Rambam says, I'll teach you how to read those verses. Those verses are always after a long period of crime. And what the verses mean is, they can't do tshuva. Right? You're talking about Yehuda and Tamar. There are no verses that indicate that he lost his free will. No verses at all. You're talking about a midrash. The reader is not going to know that unless he knows the midrash. You're right, though. There is such a midrash, and it's taken seriously by various sources. The answer over there is that there's something else that has to happen. These have to be the ancestors of the Messiah, right? And Yehuda is not going to do it. So, in order to bring about the ancestry of the Messiah, God on that one occasion took away his free will. So it means there are other reasons for which God will take away free will, but you have to know what they are, right? And there it's out of the thousands and thousands of incidents that we have, I think that's the only one that we know of that God took away someone's free will to do something like that. And what he did wasn't wrong. What he did wasn't wrong.
Who's he?
Yehuda. Yehuda Batamar. The Rambam says in Hilchos Ishus, at that time, a person met a woman, they made a contract, and they had relations with her. That was perfectly acceptable at that time. So what he did wasn't wrong. Okay. Now, the Rambam also, at the end of this chapter, great, it makes another point. If you thought this was subtle, this is really subtle. He says, God says to Abraham, he makes a covenant with him, and he says, your children are going to be strangers in a land that they don't own. Va'avadum ve'inu osam. They will serve the host country, and the host country will afflict them. Hare, says the Rambam, Gazar ala Mitzrayim la'asos ra. God decreed that the Egyptians should do evil. And then it says that God punished the Egyptians for doing that evil. Now here is a different one. It's now a zera. God decreed that they shall do evil. Decreed that they shall do evil. Here the person will say, you decreed it, I did it, and now you're punishing me. That's not fair. Okay. Now, the Rambam gives the following answer, and we will have to struggle to understand this answer. The Rambam says, because God did not decree on any individual that he should do these crimes, and therefore any individual who had wanted to could have avoided it, therefore he's guilty. He says other things too, and it's hard to know how they relate to one another, but let's just take this one idea. So the Egyptian will come to heaven, and God will say, you're going to get it. You own Jewish slaves, and you beat up Jewish slaves, and you are going to get it. So the Egyptian will say, what do you mean? You made a decree that Egypt shall punish and subjugate and hurt the Jews. So you decreed it. God says, I didn't decree it on you. Your name wasn't written into the decree. I said, Egypt will do it. You don't have to do it. If you had said no, my decree would still have come true. So you had free will. And therefore you're guilty. You made your own free choice. My decree didn't cause you to do anything. My decree was a general decree. It wasn't specific. And therefore you can't use my decree as an excuse. Now, what everybody wants to object is, but that means, suppose they all would say, I don't do it, then what would happen to the decree? Now, I want to explain to you why that's not an answer. It seems logical, but it's not an answer. Let me give you an analogy. I hope you can agree on how the analogy works. The king chooses 10 people. And he says to them, you're going to run a race. The first 4 who come in will get a prize. The last 6 who come in are going to be punished. And I'm forcing you to run the race. I'm forcing you. So they run. Some run hard, and some don't run hard. Number 5, the one who comes in number 5 doesn't run very hard. So the end of the race, 1 through 4 are rewarded, and 5 to 10 are going to be punished. Now number 5 says, you set it up so the bottom 6 are going to be punished. It's not fair. You're punishing me. It's not fair. God says, the king says, you could have come in number 3. You were lazy. You didn't run on. So you have no complaints. I didn't decree that you should be punished. On the contrary, by your own free choice, you ran slow. If you had run harder, you would have been rewarded instead of punished. So the fact that I set up the bottom 6 are going to be punished doesn't say anything about you being punished. Now who's right? The king or the runner? It seems to me the king is right. The decree is not aimed at him, and he, by his laziness, is being punished. He could have the number 3. Now, let's say, in truth, that all 6 ran slow. All 6 ran slow. The 6 bottom are lazy. They all ran lazy. So that each one, the king says, you could have been 3, 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 each one of you could have been 3. So each one of you is guilty because you were lazy and ran slow. And that's why you're being punished, not because of my decree. Because each one of you could have avoided it. Now imagine one of the 6 says, well, it's true that I could have avoided it. But imagine that all 6 of us had run at top speed. We couldn't all have avoided it. It'd be impossible. You set it up so that 6 had to be punished. So I think the right answer here is, you're right. You're right. If all 6 had run at top speed, and I punished the bottom six, then it would have been unjust. It would have been unjust. But in the real world, that's not what happened. In the real world, the bottom 6 were lazy. So in the real world, every one of the bottom 6 is guilty. What you have here is something similar to what we were talking about yesterday with free will. Can you defend your position on what really happened by talking about what would have happened if the world were different? The Egyptian or the runner wants to say, but if things had worked out differently, if everybody had run at maximum speed, then the punishment would have been unjust. The king says, you're right, if it had happened that way, but it didn't happen that way. My punishment isn't being applied to a hypothetical world that never happened. My punishment is being applied to the real world. And in this real world, every one of you was lazy, and that's why each one of you didn't come out in the first 4. Each one of you could have come out in the first four, and each one of you could have avoided punishment. So in this world, you deserve it. The Rambam says, when you talk about each Egyptian says, you made a decree. God says, I made a decree on the nation as a whole. I didn't make it on any particular individual. You, with your free will, could have been among the good ones. And the decree would have been carried by the other people. If the Egyptian says back, but if everybody had chosen to be good, what would have happened then? The answer will be, if everybody had chosen to be good, and my decree forced a punishment on people who had chosen to be good, then indeed, you would have a complaint. But it didn't happen that way. That's not what happened. What happened was, you all chose of your own free will to be bad, and therefore you all deserve to be bad. Just to be punished, it had nothing, my decree had nothing to do with it. I mean, it took me a while to work this out, but I think that's the logic behind it. I can tell the logic is perfectly good. There's no problem. Yeah.
Is there ever correct use to think about life without a conditions?
Yeah. Lots of times with hypothetical conditions are very important. If you accuse somebody of a crime, usually you back up your accusation of a crime by saying you should have done something else. So they're talking about what could have been done, which wasn't done. So there are times when you want to talk about hypothetically other things. But here, in accepting guilt, I don't think it's right. And then also, I think his argument's quite direct here.
Dr. Lisa, there's a possibility of being wrong. Even a chance to be wrong, the downline that God can give you will say, I think I'd put that out there.
Good. So understand, I'm in sympathy with what you're saying. In other words, I have explained why the Egyptian has no defense. He's asking, but let's think about God's policy. Let's think about God's policy. He set up a policy where it could have happened that the decree would have had unjust results. Now, it could be that that's why the Rambam writes as he does. Let me read it to you now. I left out a lot. It says like this. It's just, I find it hard to put everything together in one consistent passage, but maybe he says, because God did not decree on any particular individual that he should do the crime, and he only made known the normal course of the world. He only made known the normal course of the world. What is this like? Like someone saying, there will be righteous and wicked people. A wicked person cannot say, well, didn't you say to be righteous and wicked people? I'm one of the wicked ones. That's no excuse. It's normal for there to be righteous and wicked people. Nobody said, you have to be there. But that doesn't mean there was a decree on him that he should be wicked. As it says in the Torah that there will always be poor people. Now, here it makes it sound like he wasn't decreeing anything at all. He was just informing that this is the normal thing to happen. When you have strangers, foreigners in your land, it happens that they're taken advantage of. That's when you're a minority, you don't have the same respect and honor as everybody else in the land. The normal, natural thing is to happen. Then the Rambam goes back to talking about there at the end. So I don't know why he does that. I've been able to make sense out of passage completely. But I agree with you. If you say that he did it that way, he did it with a decree, and there's always there's the possibility of this coming out, the only other thing to do then is to say that he knew. And the knowledge of how people would react was built in. Now he does say at the very end of the halacha, he throws in, so to speak, and we've already explained to you, it's not possible for us to know how he knows. Who was talking about that? Nobody was talking about that. So it could be that that's what he means with that as well. I don't have fully satisfactory understanding of that. But this argument that there was no decree on a particular individual, that argument I think is sound. And it means that there is no excuse on the basis of a general decree. And by the way, in the same passage, he adds such a statement about the Jewish people as well. So it's not just non-Jews. These principles apply equally to Jews and non-Jews. There's no distinction in this particular character. Okay? Next time in Yitzhak Hashem, we'll talk about ultimate reward. 2 days to talk about it a little bit anyway.